Chapter 29. Resistance. Often I sent out an angel, a new bylaw, and it would come back bruised and bleeding, and I'd have to take it in and cherish it until the field was ready for it. Mary Baker Eddy, 1906. The first journal in 1906 contained an interesting letter to the leader from Bad Sascha M. Hartz, Hermann Claus, Deutschland. About a year ago, I asked you to allow Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures to be translated into German. And though my wish is, and ever will be the same, I have seen since then how wise it was of you not yet to give that permission. I admire your wisdom and am waiting silently and patiently, knowing that the right time will be revealed to you. I am full of joy to have become now a member of the Mother Church, full of thanks to belong to the great brotherhood of scientists, and do see in you a wise and beloved leader. In thinking of you, there is always the one thought coming to me, that by you, quote, love is reflected in love, end quote. My desire is to do the same, to give up self-will and to do nothing but the will of my Father, to overcome personality and to be nothing but reflection. This is the goal which I am wanting to reach, and I think that in striving for it, I can best prove my gratitude to you for what you have done and are doing for me and mankind. I am, dear Mrs. Eddy, yours in reverence and love. Countess Fanny von Moltke. The leader's loving reply came from God, as was so often the case through the pages of the Bible. I thank you for your excellent letter and reply in the words of Scripture, quote, the meek will he guide in judgment, and the meek will he teach his way. All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep his covenant, end quote. Quote, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, end quote. Quote, unto the upright there ariseth light in the darkness, end quote. Quote, for as a prince hast thou power with God and with men, and hast prevailed, end quote. In the first sentinel in 1906, January 6th, was a quotation from Phillips Brooks. God has not given us vast learning to solve all the problems, or unfailing wisdom to direct all the wanderings of our brothers' lives. But he has given to every one of us the power to be spiritual, and by our spirituality to lift and enlarge and enlighten the lives we touch. Beneath that quotation in her copy of that January 6th issue, Mrs. Eddy penned, quote, the secret of my life is in the above, end quote. In January, Mrs. Sarah Pike Conger, wife of the American minister to China, received a letter from Hong Kong telling about the beginning of public Christian Science services in China. Soon thereafter, Mrs. Eddy received a letter from Miss Maureen Campbell regarding work in China, which caused her to write to Mrs. Conger. Beloved student, since ever receiving your card, I have desired to write to you. And now, after what Miss Campbell has written, I hasten to reply. Her report of the success of Christian Science in benighted China when regarded on one side only, is cheering. But to look at both sides of the great question of introducing Christian science into a heathen nation gives it quite another aspect. I believe that all our great master sayings are practical and scientific. If the Dowager Empress could hold her nation, there would be no danger in teaching Christian science in her country. But a war on religion in China would be more fatal than the Boxers' Rebellion. Silent prayer in and for a heathen nation is just what is needed. But to teach and to demonstrate Christian science before the minds of the people are prepared for it, and when the laws are against it, is fraught with danger. The dear Countess von Moltke has come to see that your textbook, Science and Health, cannot be translated at present, not even in Germany. Give my kind regards to our much respected minister, your husband, and give my love to Miss Campbell. Please to pardon, if it needs forgiveness, my frankness in this letter, and know that it proceeds from the best motives. Lovingly yours, Mary Baker Eddy. While the leader was directing Christian science work all over the world, few were consistently helping the leader or following her direction. Too often, scientists became involved in their own projects or their own ideas for the promotion of Christian science. It appears that is what happened to her Committee on Publication in January. Calvin Fry recorded in his diary, "Great discord over Alfred Farlow, classifying works on Christian science in libraries. Mrs. Eddy feared it would give the enemy chance for a libel suit at law." On January 8th, Gilbert Carpenter wrote the following letter to Mr. Farlow at Mrs. Eddy's dictation. "My dear student, your report on libraries in New York City received. Thank you deeply for having instituted this important work on reform. It is much needed. I have not the time to inform myself on this subject sufficiently to suggest other than what you are already attempting. May God prosper and speed your undertaking. Have no lawsuits about this. With love, yours, Mary Baker Eddy." I called a halt to inquire as to results before writing you. Litigation must not attend this work. Nota bene. In Church Manual, see page 34, Article 6, Section 1, on your duty as a member of my church, and show your plans to its directors for their approval before you execute them. M.B.E. W. seals those papers that report me done as leader all over the country. You wrong me, and your correction is not read by thousands and injures our cause in the eyes of thousands every time you allow such lies about me to be published. And if you cannot or will not stop doing this, you are unfit for the General Publication Committee and will be removed. Eddy." All of Mrs. Eddy's lieutenants needed stern rebukes such as this from time to time to stop them from doing the work of animal magnetism and to keep them doing the work for the cause in the world as the leader outlined it. However, this letter of rebuke was never sent to Mr. Farlow. Instead, she called him to Pleasant View for an interview. The enemy was always attacking Mrs. Eddy's leadership and her life. It also attacked the lives of her workers at Pleasant View. But they were unconscious of this, because they were kept constantly at work for God. The truth and love their leader poured into their thoughts was an impervious armor. Only the leader understood the deadly thrusts of evil against her and her household. After many years of analysis, Mr. Carpenter began to comprehend the situation and wrote, "Think what it would have meant had some student fallen violently ill and passed on in the home of the greatest healer in this age. It never happened at Pleasant View, although it was a constant threat, and it was our leader's wisdom that was responsible for this protection of her home. The leader knew when any particular student was under attack and assigned other students to help him or her." Talman Fry wrote in his diary on January 11th, quote, "Mrs. Eddy says I was under the spell of malicious animal magnetism all day today, and she could not, by mild methods, waken me," end quote. It may have been January of 1906, Mr. Carpenter was recalling, when he wrote, "During one of the general watch hours, Mrs. Eddy sent the following directions, written in her handwriting, covering work for Calvin Fry, who was in need of help at that time. Quote, no arsenical or mercurial rheumatism or neuralgia. No effect of arsenic on the nerves, stomach, or liver. No relapse nor return of these beliefs. It does him good to work for me. This, with all else, God gives use in argument for F." End quote. Mr. Carpenter also said, regarding the scientific correctness of Mrs. Eddy's diagnosis, "Mrs. Eddy could tell from Mr. Fry's symptoms of depression and unconsciousness that mortal mind was affecting him like a poison. Hence, she was able to point out the remedy. While I was at Pleasant View, I saw her bring him back from what seemed death after all of her students had failed." Gilbert was not at Pleasant View much longer. His year was up on March 16, 1906. And on the morning he left, Mrs. Eddy said to him in the presence of the other students, quote, "Gilbert, it is like taking my heart out to let you go. During the year that you have been here, you have not committed a single moral offense." End quote. Before Gilbert's departure, another earnest student had joined the Pleasant View household as associate secretary, Lewis Clinton Strang. Lewis C. Strang, a New Englander, graduated from Boston University in 1892. He was well established as an editorial writer and drama critic before he became interested in Christian Science and was listed in Who's Who in America as a dramatic critic. Several of the books he authored were mentioned in that biographical sketch. Mr. Strang's serious interest in Christian Science began in 1901, and from that year, he preserved many messages from Mrs. Eddy. He became a permanent member of the household at Pleasant View in January of 1906, where he was associate secretary for about the next 15 months. Mr. Strang may have arrived just about the time the cook returned from a 2-week vacation or while she was staying in the Pleasant View cottage. Minnie's thought had grown so worldly while she was away, that its discordance caused Mrs. Eddy to send her to the cottage to stay until she was fully recovered. On January 17th, Mrs. Eddy was jolted by a discordant note from Chicago. She was accustomed to shocks when things were running smoothly, but it was nonetheless disturbing. Calvin Fry recorded in his diary, "Mrs. Eddy was much disturbed today from a letter about discord in the Chicago churches because of bylaw in our manual forbidding church conferences, etc. As always, the leader acted immediately and on the same day wrote the following letter to her directors, endeavoring to lessen the reaction to the change in a newly issued manual. Beloved disciples, the six churches of our denomination in Chicago are in need of help out of confusion in acting on church matters without conferring together on said matters. For this purpose, I propose the enclosed amendment. To prevent a difficulty caused by a conference, I sent this article to you years ago, and it did prevent all troubles at that time. But now a change comes over the spirit of their dream, and they write us that they must meet and confer, or tumble one on to another in acting. I struggled too hard to plant Christian Science on a rock in Chicago to let the worms or the gates of hell prevail against it. Hence this amendment for you to act upon. I am sorry to trouble you, Mr. Armstrong, with these changes in your new edition of our manual. But as fate has it, whenever you issue one, I have noted this. I am used to all sorts of shocks when getting on well, but can pity others who are in my predicament. The amendment to meet the Chicago situation, which is now Article 23, Section 1, was published in a January Sentinel and the February Journal. The pertinent sentence read, "No conference of churches shall be held except the annual conference of the Mother Church, unless it be when our churches located in the same state convene in unity and love, to confer on a statute of said state, or to confer harmoniously and agree on individual unity and action of the churches in said state." The leader found it necessary to concede to the demand for conferring, but she made no concession to majority rule or group action. She is inflexible in her insistence upon individual action. Mrs. Eddy had also been giving thought to the institution Mary Beecher Longyear had proposed a year earlier. She wrote to Mrs. Longyear on January 21st, "Since reading your letters, pondering the subject of an institute or sanatorium, and studying our manual, I see it is not best for you to take the initiative in this matter. It properly belongs to the Christian Science Board of Directors to do that, for thereby we shall avoid much confusion in the future. So please drop the matter." Calvin Fry was a greater help to the leader than was any other of her students. In 1906, he had been by her side every day for 24 years. And when Calvin was not himself, Mrs. Eddy suffered. On the night of January 25th, discord and suffering caused the leader to have three of the students, Laura Sargent, Julia Prescott, and Gilbert Carpenter, to keep unity watches every 3 hours throughout the night. Probably, Louis Strang was not yet trained for such work, and perhaps Calvin Fry was not himself. The next afternoon, according to Calvin's diary, Mrs. Eddy told him that he had gained his natural, strong, clear sense of Christian Science, and she thanked God for it. A fine tribute, quote, "Our Debt to Christian Science," end quote, by Reverend F. N. Ryle of Chicago, appeared in the Westminster, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, accompanied by the editor's comment, quote, "If anything in this old world needs interpretation, it is the facts of Christian Science. The greatest fact is Mrs. Eddy's book, but no one can interpret that. It is non-interpretable. It's like Saw Opera's garments, just the same on one side as on the other. Just the same interpreted as not interpreted. Nonsense, either way." End quote. This was reprinted in the Sentinel of February 10th, along with Mrs. Eddy's comments. The leader was unperturbed when she read the editor's caption and smiled as she said, "That editor hit the nail on the nonsense and broke his fingers, poor man. He could not interpret the nonsense, no sense, of evil, not knowing the all sense of good. If he could, it would heal his fingers." Louis Strang's talent and experience as an editorial writer. He had been leading editorial writer on the Washington, D.C. Times in 1904, were a great help to Mrs. Eddy. He was often able to write letters on her behalf that she would have had to dictate to most others. The following letter to George H. Lounsbury in Chicago was written on February 23rd. "Dear Brother, at the request of our beloved leader, I am writing you in reply to your letter of February 18th. You say in your letter, quote, 'We recently organized our work into four groups of classes, one for the study of the commandments, one for the Lord's Prayer and its spiritual interpretation, one for the Beatitudes, and one for the lesson work,'" end quote. "Our leader bids me ask you this question. Would you feed a babe on milk or on meat? Of course, you will answer milk. Our leader would have the Sunday school officials and teachers in all fields keep this necessity constantly before them in their work with the children. She would have them wise, for wisdom is essential in every line of Christian Science endeavor. When our leader gave the bylaw on, quote, 'subjects for lessons,' end quote, in the Sunday school, it was not her intention to limit Sunday school instruction to the routine of memorizing the letter of the designated portions of the scripture. She meant that the children should be taught the meaning of the Ten Commandments, the Lord's Prayer, and its spiritual interpretation, and the Beatitudes. These spiritual fundamentals should be so set forth by means of practical illustrations and everyday examples of love, obedience, and good, that the child will catch their spirit, understand them, and as a result, be interested in them. This work, you will readily perceive, requires consecrated and intelligent effort on the part of all connected with the Sunday school. It means the demonstration of that love which does things. To teach a child the words, quote, 'Thou shalt have no other gods before me,' is a comparatively easy task. to teach a child the meaning of that commandment so thoroughly that he can and will prove in his living that he actually has no other gods before good is the grand privilege of the Christian Science Sunday School teacher. Yours in truth, Lewis C. Strang, Associate Secretary. All eyes were focused upon the new Mother Church in Boston, and the directors were working uninterruptedly for its completion by June. When they wrote the leader that they were planning to inscribe, quote, the First Church of Christ Scientist, end quote, upon the major or tenor bell of the chime, she proposed an amplification. So according to her proposal, the inscription on the tenor bell reads, The First Church of Christ Scientist in Boston, Massachusetts, 1906, founded on love. Lest her students forget the, quote, greater part, end quote, the leader gave this word of warning, which Lewis Strang recorded on February 20th. The directors of the First Church of Christ Scientist must work in this hour that the dedication of the earthly tabernacle in the wilderness be accomplished, sure, this year. For this reason, Mother places upon all loyal students this word of warning. Healing the sick and sinful is the greater part, and all must join in this work who wish not to see this cause go down. The earthly tabernacle was for that time, but the Mother's word of warning was for all loyal students, for all time. The leader kept in touch with her youthful lecturer, Bliss Knapp. In her letter of February 27th to him, she said, quote, Your mother looked for the hour of your demonstrated wisdom and growth in Christian Science, and with me rejoices in it. End quote. Reverend James J. Rome, who was listed in the journal as a Christian Science practitioner in Boston, was asked by the directors on March 25th if he would do some night watching at the new church building. Mr. Rome assented readily, and on his first nightly tour, he assumed that communion would be postponed till the end of summer, since the building could not possibly be completed sooner. But he was jolted awake, as his interesting letter, Miscellany, page 60 to 62, states, by an announcement in the April 14th Sentinel that the extension would be dedicated on June 10th. An amended bylaw in the April 7th Sentinel foretold the discontinuance of the General Association of Teachers. The beginning of this step at this date was the announcement that their meetings shall be held biennially. Miss Caroline Foss was a student of Laura Lathrop in New York, where Miss Foss was a listed practitioner. In April, when Caroline was called to Pleasant View, she was given the special task and privilege of being Mrs. Eddy's personal maid. One experience that was helpful to her at that time has helped many another student since then. That was the making of Mrs. Eddy's bed. Laura Sargent told Caroline Foss that no one seemed to be able to make the bed to satisfy Mrs. Eddy so that she rested comfortably. As Miss Foss was working to smooth out the lumps in the feather mattress, she thought, quote, This bed belongs to God. I am making it up for Him and not for any personality. He sent me here to do it, so I can do it right. End quote. There never was one complaint from Mrs. Eddy during the whole time Miss Foss was there as to the condition of the bed. But she confessed that among her many duties, the bed-making was the only one she really tried to demonstrate consistently. Caroline Foss received her share of rebukes from the leader, as did every student at Pleasant View, with the exception of John Salcho. Mr. Carpenter recorded that John Salcho served the leader faithfully for 14 consecutive years, and during all that time, she rebuked him but once. It has been said that John was so devastated by the one rebuke Mrs. Eddy gave him that she never gave him another. This circumstance alone is proof, if mortal mind needs proof, that the leader's rebukes were never for the work done or not done, but always for the development and progress of the student. However, in 1906, none of the students knew this, and all of the students who served in her home were surprised and sometimes shocked to learn how, quote, fussy, end quote, exacting and demanding the leader was. They often thought that she made everything as difficult for them as she could, which she did, because she was endeavoring to force them to turn to God, divine mind, for everything, as she did. How many students even today turn to mind first? Are not most satisfied with a human sense of good and accomplishment? It is this human sense of accomplishment and good that is the greatest stumbling block to the student's progress spiritward. The divinity course at Pleasant View was not to teach the students about divinity, nor how to become divine. It was to waken them to the reality of their own divinity and unlimited potential, which was already a present fact. But this wakening was not an easy task. It took sharp rebukes of their humanhood and seemingly impossible demands upon them to jolt them out of a complacent sense of human good. Even then, many a student left the leader's home only to cherish his bruised and battered sense of humanity and to whisper about the leader's unreasonableness. It became official policy to ignore and bury out of sight these invaluable lessons that were so largely misunderstood. But there were a few who pondered deeply the rebukes they received and lessons they learned. We can thank God for Mr. Carpenter, who devoted all his years to pondering and endeavoring to unravel what he called the mystery of Mrs. Eddy's life. He may not have known that she was God's chosen witness on this planet, but he did discover the key to unraveling what others had considered her inexplicable behavior. When Mr. Carpenter accepted the premise that Mrs. Eddy was always right, and for that reason not to be criticized in any degree, the mystery of her life began to unfold to him. He began to see that had she explained the reason for some of her requests and demands, the effect would have been lost. In the spring of 1906, Caroline Foss and Lois Strang were receiving some of the lessons that Gilbert Carpenter had received a year earlier. One of these lessons was being called to work for Mrs. Eddy in the night. Few students ever knew how often the leader worked, day and night. But after 30 years of pondering, Mr. Carpenter came to the conclusion that when she called upon new students to treat her audibly, it was mainly for that student's training and not because she needed help. In his words, "When Mrs. Eddy called upon me to help her audibly at night during my stay in her home, I had to feel that her harmony and rest through the night depended wholly on my demonstration. Otherwise, I would not have worked as I did. Had I believed that she gave me that task merely to train me, as I now believe, I would not have been so zealous, as careful, or eager as I was. Nor would I have put into the work the extreme unction that I did." By endeavoring to understand and explain what was in essence the divinity course at Pleasant View, Mr. Carpenter has enabled earnest, loyal students today to take the divinity course in Mrs. Eddy's home.